Ready?
Do it.
Mark. Get set. Go.
The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software.
I warned everybody about the volume.
Open source. Open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio. Here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up. Link it up. And take it away. Take it away.
It's a slider. Just leave it. It's already done with.
Dude, I tried to adjust the audio right over here, and it didn't make a damn bit of difference.
I don't know what you're doing, man. Maybe you're running on a superior Apple product.
No.
Here we go again, man.
I was turning down the volume over here.
I couldn't resist.
What the heck? How come it's not making a bit of a difference?
Because it's not Alan. You're sitting in Alan's chair, man. That's what happens.
All right.
Don't do that. It's bad.
So I'm on the IRC with Alan's Nokia 770, man. It's very sweet.
Okay.
It's a fun little toy.
All right, we're back. And Pat, introduce our guest tonight.
We've got Deborah Quilter, author and expert on repetitive stress injury. Deborah, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Pat.
Deborah, RSI is a really big thing, especially with the tech community. A lot of people don't realize, you know, how you can develop bad habits, posture, and get such things as, you know, carpal tunnel syndrome and other things that are worse. You're the expert. What are some of the other injuries people might have?
Well, you mentioned one of them, carpal tunnel syndrome, and although that's the best known, it's not actually the biggest problem. Repetitive strain injury is a term, it's an umbrella term that covers many syndromes to the upper extremity, and by that I mean from your fingertip to your shoulder blade. It can include your neck, your shoulder, your mid-back, your biceps, your elbows, your forearms, your wrists, your thumbs, and your fingers, even the palm of your hand. And there's many names. I'll give you a few simple names. A lot of them have very technical Latin names, but things like epicondylitis, tennis elbow, is very common among computer users, especially from the mouse. Or any other kind of input device. People get a lot of neck pain, and people do get wrist pain, but the problem is if they've only heard of carpal tunnel syndrome and they know that that's an affliction of the wrist, and it may be that their forearms feel like they're on fire, maybe they'll put off going to a doctor because they won't realize that that's a serious problem and needs to be addressed, and it, you know, it's part of the problem that can happen with continued computer use.
What is the real main cause of it? Is it just bad posture?
You know, no. I have a list and it's not finished, but I have over 40 risk factors for RSI. And some of them are on my website, rsihelp.com, if people want to go. But this is the list that I give to teachers and yoga teachers and personal training when I'm doing teacher trainings for people who want to help people with RSI. And I can sort of run through this list for you because there are things that are risk factors that you can change, and there are things that you can't change, and there are things that you probably never would have thought of. You know, the biggest problem is ignorance of the warning signs of RSI, or that there is even RSI. Many people have never heard of it. They don't realize anything could go wrong with their hands until they have a very bad injury. But some of the things that can contribute to this are over 2 hours of computer use or any other repetitive hand movement per day. So that 2 hours, you're in the danger zone. And many people work many, many, many more hours than that at the computer every day. Jobs that require frequent or constant computer use, binge or marathon computer use, like video games or, you know, a deadline or a quarterly report or some project that has to get out the door, lack of frequent regular breaks, and awkward positioning, you know, certainly not having the proper ergonomic setup, fatigue or strain if you're already tired and you're working very late. It's very much like an athletic injury in that if you're fatigued, you tend to lose form, and the muscles tire, and that sets you up for injury. But there's other risk factors, too, like overly flexible joints. I mean, you wouldn't even know necessarily if you had hypermobile joints. You'd probably have to see a doctor to realize that. You could have an unusual anatomy. Like some people have very long arms, and that will put them at risk for RSI more because they can't sit at a keyboard because their arms are too long to ever get comfortable. They probably really would be better off standing. There's many things. You know, there could be some sort of physical problem that you have that would require a drug that might make you retain water. So there's really a lot of risk factors in addition to just the usual ones. But getting into the usual ones, just holding your elbows bent with the palms down is a risk factor for RSI. That's the position at the computer. In and of itself, that's a risk factor. Sitting in and of itself is a risk factor for RSI. Keeping your elbows bent for long periods, keeping your palms down for long periods, holding your head forward of the trunk, and poor technique. I do technique retraining when I consult with clients, and many people have idiosyncratic things that they do with their hands that they don't know are leading to this terrific forearm pain that they feel, or the terrible pain in their elbow or bicep or neck. You know, they don't realize that these things are how they use their hands. Did you get a chance to see my video on technique?
Yes, I did. It seemed what really jumped out at me was kids starting out on computers. It seems that the parents are completely unaware of how these, you know, the kids should sit. It seemed like they had this, in the video, had this little girl sitting in this chair where she was about, I don't
horrible.
Know, yeah, 2 feet below the desk, and she was reaching up for the mouse with her arm, you
and
know,
she was
hooked
looking,
over.
Looking up at the computer, which is the worst thing. You shouldn't look up at a computer for many reasons. And I was horrified when I saw that video, too. I'm very concerned about children. I don't think children should use computers. And I certainly don't think they should be playing computer games. We're seeing a lot of very, very bad thumb injuries from computer games and now BlackBerries.
Crackberries, yes.
And the BlackBerry, they actually call it BlackBerry thumb. It's decorvane.
Actually, you know what? They call it Atari thumb. It started way back when I was a kid.
Yeah,
you guys remember that, right?
Yeah, push over
Atari
button.
Thumb. Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. Space Invader thumb, Nintendonitis. There's lots of names. I did a story for one of the computer gaming magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And this editor, you know, the editor of a magazine knows who his reader is. And they really are the pivotal person when it comes to knowing and having their pulse on an industry or a field. And this editor told me that there were a lot of young guys, you know, maybe not even in their 30s, just starting out working, and they were gamers, serious gamers. And he said that they would work at a computer job for 40, 50, 60 hours a week, and then on Friday night they'd come home, start a game, and play that game until Sunday morning without a break.
Yeah, you had people in Korea, you've had people go to, like, internet cafes and gaming cafes and play for 3-4 days
play
straight.
Until they die.
And they drop dead.
Are you serious?
They absolutely, yep.
They die, actually die.
Yeah.
They don't just
Yep, pushing up daisies.
Really?
Yeah,
those couple in Korea.
That's a hell of a repetitive strain injury, huh?
Yeah, they play those games for like 3 or 4 days straight.
Play until you're inhabiting a coffin. But yeah, that's actually true.
What were they dying of? Dehydration? Or?
One guy died of heart failure. He had some kind of a heart condition that he didn't know about.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what the other one was. There was two or three of them over the last year or so.
I'm really sorry to hear that. I get calls from people all the time, you know, what should we do about children? How can we make it safe for children? And the thing is, it all sounds really nice in theory. But if you've ever tried to get a 9-year-old kid away from a game, it's really hard to get them to stop playing. They get so engrossed. And I watched the kids play. They were playing more like an arcade game once, but these young kids were literally beating their hands against the machine. And that kind of force translates into big trauma for the soft tissue of the hands. It's like dancing on concrete. It's like, you know, punching your hand into a wall or something. It's really not good for the hand to use that kind of force. And there's a lot of trouble with the input devices. The people who design the input devices don't know anatomy, kinesiology, good biomechanics, or they would never design such... Oh, I don't know. Maybe they would anyway. But, I mean, a responsible person who understood how the human body was supposed to move and cared about the person who was using this tool would never design something like a mouse. A mouse is a recipe for disaster. It puts you in two very bad positions at once. Ulnar deviation, which means that you're twisting the wrist to the outside. As though, you know, if you look at a windshield wiper, the windshield wiper would be going to the outside. That's ulnar deviation, and dorsiflexion is the position where it's like you're pushing open a door, so your hand is bent at the wrist. So this tool puts someone's hand in two very bad positions, especially together. It just wreaks havoc with the tendons and nerves of the hand. And you know, people are always calling me and saying, what's a good ergonomic mouse? And they usually don't like my response, but I feel obligated to at least warn people about the dangers and not let them think that just because something is labeled ergonomic as a marketing device, that it's actually going to be better for their hands.
Are trackballs any better?
Pardon?
Are trackballs any better than a mouse?
Trackballs, no. They also put you in dorsiflexion and ulnar deviation. The problem here, Pat, is that with the keyboard, you were able to use 10 fingers of two hands. Or if you were a two-fingered typist, you'd at least be using both hands. And actually, two-fingered typing is not a bad idea. It's one of the few ways of typing that's not totally injurious, but I'm digressing. I'll come back to that point later on. Anyway, so you've got the typewriter keyboard. You've got it balances the work between two fingers, between two hands and 10 fingers. The keyboard puts all the important keys on the outer periphery. If you think of the enter key, delete, the number pad, all of these things are placed near the pinky, which is the weakest finger, which also causes you to ulnar deviate as you're reaching for it. That's what most people do. So instead of using 10 fingers and two hands and balancing the work, you are using one or two fingers, or maybe the thumb if you've got one of those scrolling devices. of one hand, and this is usually the same hand that you're brushing your teeth with, you're writing with. It's, you know, very few people are truly ambidextrous, and it's just too much. And to make matters even worse, people often have their mouse up on their desk way far away. So now the injury is radiating from the finger up through the wrist and elbow, up through the shoulder, into the neck.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate for just a moment.
Okay.
Aren't your arms and hands and wrists built with these wonderful axes that God gave us so that we can spin and twist and do all this stuff and, you know, and not injure ourselves? And because, like, I'm a programmer, and I know people that have been programming and have crappy posture and have been programming for 30 years for 16 uh-huh. hours a day and don't have repetitive stress injuries.
What about smokers who smoke for 30 years and don't get lung cancer?
Right.
That doesn't mean that smoking's still good for you.
But it doesn't mean that it's hurting them either. You know what I mean?
This comes up all the time, this question. And there's two parts of it. You said, you know, aren't our arms made to move? Yes, I mean, my gosh, that's part of the beauty of the hand is its versatility. It can do so much. It can see around corners. It can do everything from play the violin to break a brick.
Right, but here's my real question in that is that if you are using your wrist or your hand in that one specific manner, okay, spinning it one way to use your mouse, doesn't your muscles strengthen, you know, in that manner? Or is every muscle use that you do in that respect is going to weaken it and cause injury? You know what I mean? Is there a point where injury starts?
Yeah. Remember when we talked about the over 2 hours of computer use?
Mm-hmm.
It's like an athlete. You take breaks. Athletes cross train. They are very careful not to overuse a certain body part and not to strengthen one body part at the expense of the others.
Mm-hmm.
But most people, first of all, don't have the core strength to sit properly.
Mm-hmm.
I teach an exercise program to help people rehabilitate from RSI. And most people get injured because their back and abdominal muscles are so weak that they can't hold themselves properly in a seated posture, which is unnatural to begin with. And the core supports the arm. So the muscles don't adapt. They don't get stronger. They get out of balance. And you can get weak from overuse. What happens is the muscles, the strong muscles in the back that should be helping the arm carry this load of work, get weak from underuse, and these tiny little delicate muscles of the hand and forearm get weak from overuse. And it's really tricky because once you have that kind of soft tissue damage, it doesn't heal the way a broken bone or a surgery would heal. The tissue tends to get re-injured more frequently, and the re-injuries are worse than the injury that you came in with. So it's not that simple. And regarding your friend, the programmer, who's been doing this for 16 hours for 30 years and doesn't have an injury, God bless him. It's wonderful. I'm happy that he's not injured, but I would not recommend that to anyone else. It's very much like, I don't know who brought up smoking.
That was me.
Who
Pat.
In the room? Pat.
Yeah.
Well, then who else was talking? Then I'm talking to
that was me. It was Link.
There's four of us in the room here, Deborah. There's Dan, there's Link, and there's Alan besides myself.
Oh, okay. So, Link,
yes.
You were the devil's advocate?
Right.
Okay. Well anyway.
I'm not done yet either, but keep going.
Oh, well, yes. Yes, I'm used to this. We get these questions a lot. But in any case, smoking, it is one of the best analogies for RSI. Because one cigarette isn't going to kill you. A pack of cigarettes probably won't give you lung cancer. But it's that day-in, day-out habit that nature doesn't forgive.
Mm-hmm.
And the hand is not meant for this work. It's not meant to be twisted and torqued the way that people use them at computers. The computer puts you in very awkward positions, the keyboard and the monitor. Holding yourself in that position day in and day out is really not good for the body. The body was meant to move in a holistic fashion. We're meant to walk. We're designed to move. And we're not designed to sit.
That brings up another good point, another good question. Yeah, I've heard you say a couple times that we're not designed to sit and stuff like that, and that's not, you know, not an appropriate position for your body. However, when we're born, and we grow in a fetal position, which is exactly sitting.
Ass first.
You know, I mean, that's how we're made. We're made sitting, and we come out sitting, and for the first few years of our life, Well, I mean, we don't sit on our butt,
that's
right?
Hunkering.
But it's that position, right?
Yeah, hunkering is different. Squatting is different from sitting, considerably.
I don't think I could hunker or squat all day when I program, though. You know, that would be difficult.
No. But see, you're trying to adapt your body to the computer. My point is, why don't we create devices that don't strain our bodies so that we can work safely and naturally? We're contorting ourselves for the technology. What I think we need to do is change the way we work.
So what's an ideal workplace for okay, I'll give you my case in point. I've been programming for a long time. I program sometimes upwards of 16 or more hours a day, sit in front of a computer and do my stuff. I don't have any problems with my wrists. I've been doing it for over 20 years. You know, I'm only 36, but I've been doing it for 20 years. If I was going to have carpal tunnel, it'd have caught me by now. You know what I mean?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, I've seen a lot of people who never thought this could happen to them. In fact, they didn't believe that RSI existed. They thought people were just, you know.
No, but I mean, like, there's case examples like me. Like, I've done this for a really long time, and I haven't had any problem. Occasionally, I've had a pain in my wrist, but most of the time I attribute that to doing some, you know, odd physical activity, like, I don't know, helping somebody move over the weekend or something like that. My wrists will hurt from, you know, carrying boxes or something like that. That's not a normal movement for me.
Yeah,
but
that's how it starts.
I don't normally have wrist pain and things like that. However, I know other people in my office who do not do the same number of hours at a computer that I do. They don't do it the same way that I do it, and they have constant problems. So Is it something that maybe has something to do with your, you know, possibly with an individual's physiology?
Sure,
that's
it could be genetic to a certain degree.
Yeah, that's why I was asking if it was, you know, in every case, if it was something that, you know, these people get injured by using their mouse, or if it's something that, like you mentioned before, about athletes, right? There's athletes that run 15 miles or 20, what is that, a marathon, 26 miles, right? I could not run 26 miles, but I'm not an athlete. They train to be able to do that. So if I'm doing 16 hours a day, even with my bad posture, using my mouse the way that I'm using it, is that not training my hand and my wrist to be able to do that in much the same way as an athlete would train to run a marathon, you know, that an average person could not do?
Well, I don't think so. You have to train the whole body. And if you can't just train the hand in isolation, but there's more than one aspect. This is very complicated. The things that you're asking me are very complicated. And I really hope that you read my book carefully, because a lot of this is is covered in the book in some detail, and more detail than I can probably talk about here.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to make a couple of points.
Sure.
There is a runner's body. These people have hips and knees that are built for running. Their joints move. They can run more easily than someone who's got a deep Q angle and is constantly going to be plagued with knee problems, or somebody who's got foot problems. You know, a lot of it's the way your anatomy is shaped. It will help you or hinder you depending upon the sport that you're trying to play. Some of it is anatomy. People have different tolerances to pain. Some people are so oblivious to their bodies that it's not until they wake up with screaming wrist pain one morning that they realize there's a problem. And that pain that you attributed to helping someone move, this is straight out of my lecture. I say, you know, people, when they're getting the early warning signs of RSI, they are so subtle, you wouldn't think anything was wrong unless you were really sensitive and attentive to your body. You wouldn't go to a doctor and say, you know, doctor, my hands feel weird. I mean, would you go to your doctor and say, present with something like that? Probably not. Would you say, doctor, it feels like I'm wearing gloves or jewelry when I'm not. Or you start shifting your briefcase to the other hand. I mean, you don't know unless you've been testing your grip strength. How would you even know you're losing grip strength? Nobody has a baseline of their grip strength. You don't know if you can press 60 pounds and then suddenly you're down to 30. So the loss of power, all of these subtle things happen way before pain. And by the time you're in pain, it's too late.
So what do we do then, Deborah? Once we start getting symptoms, say numbness, mm-hmm. or even pain, what do? Do we stop what we're doing? Do we go out and seek help immediately? What's the best way to approach this?
I would definitely advise you stop using the computer and seek competent medical help immediately, and take as much time as you need away from the computer to heal completely, and then really think about it twice before you go back to a job that requires computing.
So how do you then approach the issue of ergonomics in the workplace to your employer?
That's a good question.
Because your employer is going to say, you know, you're out of your gourd, go back to work. You can't, like, walk to your employer and say, well, listen, my pinky's tingling, and I can't program and do that deadline of the project
now,
today.
I hear something in your tone here that I want to sort of point out. First of all, I didn't create this situation. I just wrote a couple of books about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any great answer for you. I can't wave my magic wand and make this all go away. I can't give you an answer that you're going to like to hear. I can only tell you what I wish someone had told me before I got injured. And I can tell you this. I don't want anyone in that room or anyone listening to this show to have to go through RSI. That's my wish. I can't create a better world. If I could create a better world, I would create a world where work didn't hurt people, where these kinds of questions didn't arise.
I guess where Link is coming from, I mean, you go to a job and an employer, you know, they're going to laugh at you if you tell them, you know, I can't code the program because my hand is feeling a little numb today. You know, they'll laugh at you and tell you.
You know, just how do you approach them about making an ergonomic, you know, workstation or something? They don't, you know what I mean? Like, ergonomic furniture and stuff like that is expensive.
Oh, yeah.
It's much more expensive than getting a piece of plywood for you to, you know. Yeah, but it's
cheap compared with one case of carpal tunnel syndrome.
But it's only cheap if
maybe
it's only cheap compared to carpal tunnel syndrome if they believe you have it. You know, if they appreciate your condition.
Yeah. You know, if you end up at a doctor at it, you know.
Right.
This is a big problem because employers for years were not sympathetic, and they did laugh at the first people who got RSI, and they called those people sacrificial lambs. Those people would valiantly try to keep, because they not only got laughed at by their employers a lot of times and misbelieved and shrugged off, they also were harassed by their coworkers.
Sure.
They were saying, you know, you're not pulling your load here. How come you're not working? You know, you're not staying late. How come? And very often, I mean, I call it a nice guy's disease because a lot of people who got injured first were the hardest workers, the most dedicated. A lot of people were very macho. They just figured they'd muscle through the pain and it would go away. But that's the worst thing you can do because it won't go away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people tried to fix it on the outside with acupuncture or chiropractic or taking pain medications, anything but the thing that would help them the most.
Sure, and we have one of our people on IRC mentions that where he works, they push his employers push it off as personal injury, which is what I see a lot, right? But it really isn't in most cases, right? It's a work-related
Absolutely,
injury,
yeah.
Right? You're working
is,
16 hours a day
way.
Kind of thing.
They don't want to have to pay. A lot of the employers don't want to have to pay higher workers' compensation premiums. And this is where it gets really vicious because in some states, they don't think that carpal tunnel syndrome is a work-related. They'll say it's age-related, it's, you know, from another cause, it's not from work. A lot of doctors will agree to this because they don't want to have to go through workers' compensation because they're getting just inundated with paperwork and they have to go make appearances and file reports. The workers' compensation system is designed to prevent lawsuits. You can't sue your employer if you're injured on the job. You can't sue your employer. You have to go through workers' compensation. Workers' compensation is very arduous. They very often will try to contest your claim and say that it's, you know, it's caused by something else. It's a nightmare for anyone who's trying to go through it. You know, if you've got a family to support and you can't earn a living, it can really be devastating. It can be a disaster.
They might just have to outsource us to India.
Well, I get a lot of email from India from people with terrible wrist problems, and they're desperate, and they're outsourcing RSI. So I am really sympathetic because the people, you want to work. You don't want to be relegated to the sidelines at the age of 30. I mean, I knew some graphic designers who worked for a cartoon channel, and the average age of those guys was 23 or 24, and every single one of them was injured. They were all out. And then I was at a job fair once, and I happened to mention to one of the recruiters, he asked me what I did, and I told him I had this expertise in RSI. And this really shocked me. This really shocked me. He looked at me straight in the face, and he said, "We don't have a problem with RSI. If somebody gets injured, we just hire someone younger."
Now,
I couldn't believe my ears. And I thought, you know, that was just so heartless. And people are getting injured younger and younger and younger. You know, if you're lucky enough, some people are bulletproof and they can smoke and drink for 80 years and die, you know, of something else. But most people, if they abuse their body and they keep hammering these delicate tendons, nerves, and muscles, will get an injury. And it can take years to build, but once you've got one, watch out. because you don't have just one thing. Most people have at least 17, two dozen different injuries. You get substitution and compensatory disabilities, and it gets worse even when you're doing all the right things because of the way it is. So you can't just snap your fingers and get your hands back, and you certainly can't go back to doing the job you were doing before. I hope this never happens to you or Link or the other guy. I didn't catch his name.
Dan and Alan.
But at, what is it?
We got Dan and Alan here.
Dan, Alan, and Link, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question here or your opinion on something. On a kind of political end of it, and you have brought up, we mentioned about it being, you know, how it's perceived in the work environment. I can almost see that business or the business environment may not perceive it as a problem in the workplace as much, from the perspective that, you know, being in our environment, computer programmers, IT and everything, we don't just do that type of work at home. You had mentioned that people go home on the weekend and play games until Sunday night. It's not just a work-related issue there. And
no.
It sounds like it would be tough. You know, here we have a situation where, you know, your work may be contributing to your injury, but also your free time is contributing to the injury. How can we expect the business environment to kind of take its, you know, quote, seriously, that it is their problem?
Some of the best research on RSI was done for the OSHA standard. Do you remember that? It was like 2000. It was the first thing that Bush, when he was elected the first time, drew back. They spent years designing the OSHA ergonomic standard.
Okay.
And businesses know. They are very aware of this problem because they have to pay for it. There's a lot of people working in this field trying to do something about all these injuries through ergonomics, and I would like to say something about that because I think that ergonomics it's not the whole answer. In fact, it can in some cases make things worse in a strange way. But business knows this, and one of the tactics that the insurance companies try to use to avoid paying for someone's injury is saying, well, he gardens or he does carpentry. But there's a big difference between gardening on the weekend or, you know, working on your house and using a computer. The computer is really so dangerous. And you're using it, what are you doing more of? Usually, it's the computer that gives someone the injury, and then everything else starts being affected too. They suddenly can't play the guitar anymore without pain. It hurts them to ride their bike. They can't go swimming because their shoulders bother them, or they start ulnar deviating in the water. Many, many people have this problem, and there are good people in the business world who are trying to address this. If you have a problem with your boss, you can call OSHA under the, there's like a general clause that you can call, and you can get an investigation. There's also some good groups like NYCOSH, NYCOSH, the New York Committee on Occupational Safety and Health, and they're terrific. Those people advocate for injured workers. So you're not alone. But I think what happens is people do feel alone, and they feel like, for many reasons. I mean, sometimes you'll get somebody who's working in a small shop, and they're one of the executives, and they don't want their boss to have to pay for their injury because they feel bad. You know, they feel like they're part of the company and they're letting everybody down if they're causing more expense to the company. But the thing is, if you've got health insurance and you file for health insurance for an arm injury, the first thing that insurance company is going to turn around and do is they're going to say, is this work-related? And if it's work-related, you've got to file for workers' comp. You have to file for workers' comp. So the thing to do if you're injured is say, I have to file this claim. And the minute you do that, you start in motion the workers' compensation system. And they have to take that seriously. You need to find a doctor who will be your advocate. One of the best ways to find a doctor is to go to the RSI support group. In fact, they're terrific for giving you advice on everything, except medical advice. You should really be careful about, you know, people giving you medical advice who aren't trained doctors. But in terms of finding a good workers' comp lawyer, in terms of finding a sympathetic and knowledgeable doctor, they're very hard to find. Most doctors don't know the first thing about RSI. They don't know what to do. And the standard treatments for RSI can make matters so much worse. You know, they'll tell people to take non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, which just mask the pain so the injury is getting worse and you're working without feeling the pain. They'll give you cortisone injections that can rupture the tendons and the tissues, and so that when you do start healing, everything will get better except where you got the shot. I've heard that a million times. They can splint you, which can cause disuse atrophy of the muscles, and it prevents fluid return and impedes healing. Or they can recommend surgery, whether it's needed or not, and the surgery can have very serious consequences. So, when it comes to healing, the more you know and the more you do for yourself, the better you're going to heal. You are your best friend. You are your best doctor. You are the one who's living inside your skin. You are the one who's using your hands carefully or not. So that's the good news. You know, when people finally decide to heal and take matters into their own hands, then they can start getting better. But I wish you guys had been at my workshop for people with RSI that I gave. I went to California and I did a group workshop for people with RSI, and I had people in that room. One was a 22-year-old who couldn't use her hands at all. She was disabled. 22 years old.
That's horrible.
There was a guy who wasn't even...
What do you do with someone like that? What course of action do they have besides just walking away from everything?
That's where it gets very interesting, because then you start seeing people either give it all up, and I've heard of, unfortunately, people tell me I shouldn't talk about this dark side of RSI, but I know people who've committed suicide.
That's horrible.
And, yeah, because they feel, you know, like they feel like their life is over. They feel like they can't make a living. They can't contribute anything. They're just a drag on them, their families. They're in excruciating pain. So they just want to end it all. They can get very depressed. And certainly they can't work, because the most common question I get on my website is, "Dear Ms. Quilter, what job can I do now that I can't use my hands anymore? Please help me. You know, I'm desperate. I have to make a living." And, you know, and people want to work anyway. I mean, people usually want to be doing something. They don't want to sit around collecting disability.
We need to, as programmers and computer geeks, we need to come up with a psychic interface where it directly interfaces with your mind. You don't actually have to touch anything.
Oh, that scares me even more.
Yeah, that's a whole nother question for another night.
Yeah, because they do have this stuff that you can do with your eyes, and oh my God, you know, and the voice technology, I'm surprised no one's asked me about that yet, but I've talked to reporters who, you know, would rather, they tried to use voice recognition, and then they ruined their voices in addition to having RSI. They couldn't talk. And I can hear it. There's a very distinctive scarring that you can hear when people have injured their vocal folds using that. But what do people do? Well, then there's the other thing, where people start getting really creative. And I used to teach a workshop called Creating a New Career. And we would all just sit around. A bunch of people would come in, and, you know, they were, a lot of them, really bright, had a lot to offer, very specialized in their careers, and, you know, obviously had a lot to offer somebody, but they couldn't use their hands. And this is the rub. If you can't use a computer, your job options are really limited. You know, people say, well, I could be a shrink. Well, I've had 5 clients who were psychotherapists come to me for RSI from sitting, you know, because they're writing reports or writing books or just sitting all day taking hand notes. So, you know, it's not like it's that easy. But there are people who do come up with other ways to make a living. And when you reach the point where you realize that this was the best thing that could ever happen to you, then I think you've got it made.
Well, what can we do? RSI, I mean, you talk about people who are injured and they've had to completely change their lives. What about for people like us, you know, who are working, you know, we deal with the computers every day. What can we do short term on a day-to-day basis that might help relieve the stress of this, to prevent this? What, besides taking breaks and stretching, is there anything else you recommend?
Well, I would take a 5 to 10 minute break every 20 minutes away from the computer. I would get up out of your chair and walk around. If you can work standing up occasionally, you know, like I have a sit-stand workstation, that's terrific. If you guys are going to have lunch together, walk down the hall, tap on the guy's door and say, hey, Charlie, would you like to have lunch with me? Don't email him. Don't email when you can pick up the phone. Don't do something with a computer that you could do any other way. Don't use the BlackBerry. Don't text message. Start a reasonable exercise program. Keep your upper extremity strong. Strengthen your back muscles, your erector spinae, the muscles that keep your spine long, the latissimus dorsi, your mountain climbing muscles, the rhomboids, the muscles that hold your shoulder blades together and flush with your ribs. Stretch your pectoralis, the muscles across the front of your chest. Keep your range of motion and move as much as you can. The other indispensable piece of advice, and the only piece of technology that I heartily approve of and recommend, is a telephone headset. Never cradle the phone while you're typing or any other time. It's really, really bad for your neck. And using a headset, especially if you're willing to pop for the money, they're a little expensive, but if you can afford a cordless remote headset, it's just heaven, because then you can walk around while you're talking. You're not tethered to your computer or your desk. Those are really good pieces of advice. I would also highly recommend that you heed the warning signs of RSI. I posted on my website under warning signs. And, you know, if you start having symptoms, go see somebody good and, you know, get into treatment really early. Take time off.
Let me ask you a question.
You can also have a, you know, get the best chair that you can afford and then spend as little time as possible sitting in it.
Let me ask you a question here. Once you start showing the symptoms of RSI, is it possible to turn that bus around? Or is it inevitable that you're going to end up with, you know, dysfunctional hands, so to speak? I mean, or so to speak, once you get to that point where your hands hurt so much, is it possible to turn it around? Or has the damage been, you know, is it permanent and that's all? That's, you know, game over.
RSI is not always painful. Sometimes people just have tremendous lack of coordination, and it's not painful, but it's still very debilitating. I just want to make that point. There are four stages of injury, three stages of injury. And in the first stage, you get pain and fatigue near the end of the workday. Your symptoms might resolve overnight or on days off. The condition would last for a few weeks or months. And at that point, the injury is reversible. In stage two, you have recurrent pain and fatigue earlier in the workday, night symptoms that can cause sleep disturbances, reduced work capacity, physical signs such as swelling or, self-massage or something like that, and that condition will persist for months, and then it's possibly reversible. But hardly anybody ever comes in at stage two. Usually they wait until stage three, where the pain and fatigue happen every day, even during rest and non-repetitive movements. They're having night pain, they have reduced work capacity, and this lasts for months to years, and at that point, it's chronic. But, having said that, can you get better? Yes. I mean, I have seen people who were in, you know, very, very bad pain, who finally got to the point where they weren't always in pain, and they were a little bit stronger, and you know, they could do things that they couldn't do before. And, you know, like one woman couldn't slice a banana, but now she can slice a banana again. You know, it's a big deal. So, some people can't feed themselves because it's too painful to bring the fork to their mouth, but then, you know, they get to the point where they can eat again. So, by themselves. So, it depends on the person, it depends on the injury, but it's really important to get into treatment early so that you don't get to the point where your hands literally give out on you and you just can't do anything.
Deborah, I have a question for you. Like, sometimes in my office I see people with those wrist guards on. Do those things actually work at all?
Are they splints?
Yeah, the wrist splints, yeah. The braces.
Those are, if they're working with them on, it's a really bad idea. You shouldn't work with splints on. Sometimes people need them because they will flex their wrist when they sleep, and that will wake them up with numbness and tingling. But splints are, a medical treatment, and they should be performed only under a good doctor's supervision, and usually for time-limited periods. You don't use them. Usually, a lot of people use them to keep themselves out of pain, but it can really make things worse. One of the things that can happen is that because you're not moving, they lead you to move your hands in a more awkward position, causing further injury to the hand. And if there's swelling, it can prevent circulation and fluid return, and that impedes healing. And it can make matters significantly worse. It can also be a risk factor for something called reflex sympathetic dysfunction, which is really horrible, which is one of the things that can happen if you have if you wear splints or have carpal tunnel surgery. So,
when you had said about taking breaks, frequent breaks during the workday, are there kind of specific exercises that we could do to help fend off RSI?
Yes, you can. I have actually, when they get around to running it, I did a segment for iVillage Healthologies, and I gave a bunch of neck stretches that you can do during the day that are really good. And basically, if you just sort of sit tall with your head over your spine and gaze over your right shoulder, and just sort of look over your right shoulder for a while, you know, 30 seconds or so. But you're not, don't think of stretching or forcing, just look over that way. And then come back to center. And then just look over your left shoulder for a while. And feel that. And also notice if there's any difference from side to side. Very often there is. That's one that you can do. And then the other one is sitting tall again. Bring your ear toward your shoulder. So bring your right ear toward your right shoulder. And stay there and breathe patiently. And then come back to center and very gently, on an exhalation, bring your left ear towards your left shoulder and feel the release on the other side. The thing about exercise is that if you have an injury, usually the first thing someone wants to do with you is the last thing they should be doing. In other words, if people know that you've got epicondylitis, which is, you know, an elbow injury, a lot of times they'll give you wrist curls. And that's exactly what you don't want to be doing at that point if you're all inflamed, because it's like doing 100 more keystrokes, you know, with weight now. So what needs to happen is you need to strengthen the muscles of the back. And stretch the muscles in the front so that you're creating space for the nerves and the blood flow that's going down to your arm. But yeah, you can do your neck stretches. You can stand up, and I really recommend that you look out the window and let your eyes relax on a distant object, because our eyes also get very fatigued and focused from fixating on the screen, same distance all the time. In terms of your hands, you can gently, you know, let your hands relax by your side and just circle your fingers, circle your wrists gently in a clockwise position, and then in the other position going down the counterclockwise direction. And then you can take your palms, put them together in front of you, and then gently press down, and you'll feel a little stretch in your forearms, and that can be nice. If you do those things every day, that will help you. And if you, you're a radio show, but if you weren't, I have some really great exercises. I'm probably going to do a book on my exercise program for RSI. And it's really wonderful. And in the meantime, if you can get your hands on the current issue of Fit Yoga, there's an exercise layout of some of my exercises in the August issue. So you can look at that as well.
Okay, so when you say exercising, you're talking kind of like, you know, yoga kind of stretching. Because when I think of exercising, I think of going running and lifting weights. And that's probably not the best thing to do, huh?
Well, actually, it depends. If you can run and it doesn't hurt your arms, That's fantastic because you're getting cardio, your blood circulating. And I do have a strength training program where we are using weights. That's what I teach before I teach yoga. It's not just stretching. In fact, I focus on building strength first. People think of yoga as stretching, and unfortunately, that's because usually you see people who are in, you know, they're doing something that requires enormous flexibility. But in fact, yoga can be tremendously strengthening. And that's what you want to build. You need to balance. You don't want to be too flexible. You don't want to focus too much on the strength training. You need a balance between the two. That way your muscles are going to be healthy. But yes, in my program, we do total body workout. And when people are ready for it, I give them weights. And they can get plenty strong. I had a guy gain a half an inch in his biceps, and he never used more than 5 pounds of weight. It's amazing. So he was happy, you know. It's great. He had a lot of strength.
Deborah, I want to thank you for coming on. We really appreciate you coming on and you know, telling us about what some of the risks of RSI and what we can do to avoid it. We really appreciate you.
Well, I... Thanks for, I hope this has been somewhat useful to you. And, yeah, call me anytime if you have any follow-up questions or anything that I can help you with, please call. And thanks so much for the opportunity. I hope that this helps a lot of people.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot, Deborah.
Yeah, so basically, if we were to sum it up, it's, you know, moderation, take a lot of breaks, exercise, you know, do some stretching. And, you know, if you're going to be in that marathon, make sure you take that marathon with a lot of breaks, right?
Well, I would say if there's any way you can avoid using a computer, the single most important thing you could do if you want to avoid RSI is stop using the computer. That's the thing that people think they can't do. But that would be my first suggestion before all the other stuff. But certainly taking breaks is good, you know, having appropriate ergonomics is good. Knowing the warning signs and risk factors for RSI, listening to your body when you're getting signals. But don't abuse your body. Remember that you're in the danger zone with 2 hours of computing a day. So... just bear in mind that, you know, it's the body is, you know, a very wonderful instrument. It can take a lot, but it's not something that we want to abuse.
Thank you, Deborah. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I mean, I do appreciate it. And what's the name of your book again?
It's called The Repetitive Strain Injury Recovery Book. And if people want a lot of good information about RSI, they can go to my website, which is rsihelp.com. So that's rsihelp.com. And I put articles up there, news, you know, new things that happen. So if people want to be up to date, they can go there. And they can sign my mailing list if they want to know when I'm going to be speaking or giving a public workshop.
All right. Thanks a lot, Deborah. We really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, it's good meeting all of you guys.
Take care. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
You have a good week. Thank you very much.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Deborah Quilter.
Very interesting.
This after-school special has been brought to you by the Linux Link Tech Show. She brought up good points, though, man.
Yeah, you know, it's the thing that stinks about RSI is until you actually start experiencing it, you don't think about it. You don't even think about it. And it is definitely not a fun thing.
Yeah.
So hopefully that'll help some of our listeners out there, you know, if you're going to be... And you know what? That's the thing. She says... don't use a computer, but, you know, our
Link
audience...
Link is, like, stepping away from his machine right now as we speak.
Yep. That's it. Audience, I'm done, man.
Our audience, is that's, like, the death kill.
Screw you. I'm just going to flap my hands around and look over my right shoulder and talk into the microphone. That's it. I'm
but
done.
But the thing is...
We have to move the microphone.
And, yeah, you'll be looking at it on the other side.
Don't use it more than 2 hours a day right off the bat, you know. I don't know. I don't think anybody in our audience...
Every day.
It, you know, 2 hours a day, that's like
a... I use it more than two hours a day.
Would be would mean you're becoming upper management.
That's true.
Well, yeah,
I mean,
no.
And that's the thing, though. But if you're going to use your computer, and you can use it a lot, I mean, you know, get take some breaks.
Yeah, you need to take a... Listen, the smokers go off at 15 minutes every 2 hours. I think we should at least, you know, mimic what they're doing. They don't
sip
with cigars.
Go with them, yeah. Take a cigar.
Like, I take frequent
Then you're
breaks
out for at least an hour.
I go harangue the other person, you know, that you work with.
Dan masturbates for at least 15 minutes once an hour.
You know, take some, you know, do some exercises.
Just get his own personal stall.
But doesn't that you know, hurt your wrist? You get RSI from that, too, right? You know, like tennis elbow or something?
Dude, I don't know how long you are doing it for. But, you know, if
cranking
if it's
them
more
out.
Than 15
well, I'm a,
minutes
I'm a man.
Day,
I can do it for, you know, hours.
That doesn't. That's not just RSI. That's abuse of a penis. Okay, come
Let's
on.
Let's just move on now.
Holy mackerel.
So what's been going on, guys?
You know what? I would like
penis abuse.
To step back a couple weeks ago, and let's talk about, because I know you want to talk about Demo Recorder.
Well, we're going to.
I would like to talk about Screencast.
We're going to talk to the guy in a couple weeks. He's coming
I would
on.
Like to mention, but I would like to go back 2 weeks ago to when you were installing Arc. I was installing Arc.
That's right.
And I was doing Slackintosh, and I would like to hear your words. And I'll add my words too. And
do you want to hear my words?
You guys can kiss off. Yes.
No way.
Yeah, I do.
Even after it seemed, you know what happens because everybody's been sending emails and shit in, right? Going
evil emails.
What the hell is going on? Link's not talking anymore.
It's the second coming of Alan.
How come he's got nothing to say? I'm gonna tell you exactly why. It's because Pat keeps getting the same damn people on. They keep doing Myth fucking TV. And there's only so many episodes of Myth TV I can listen to in my head, even when I'm here.
Myth TV rocks, man.
I'm sure it does. I'm going to find out. You know, I just bought that.
Yes, I just sold my tuner card to Link.
Pat just sold me his tuner card, the PVR, the 150, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to try that Not Myth out.
It's nice.
That we're talking about.
It did work really nice. Everything was all set up for you.
No, seriously, I'm going to try that. I think it was a 700 megahertz machine or something like that. That
probably
I
like 30 that. Minutes after you drop in the card, you'll be
and it's
on
like
TV.
A no-brainer install, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah,
psh, yeah.
Answer the questions.
But no, I'm gonna do that. And you know, it's just been a combination of things, but stuff like I've been really busy, and you know, we've had technical issues, and.
Yeah, last week, Dan's out of the room. Last week was an abortion, pretty much.
Some of the guests, like, not all of us are always into all of the guests that we
have. Listen, I'm guilty of that, too. I'm guilty of that, too.
So, you know, and even this one that we had tonight, you know, I appreciate what she has to say, but I think it's carrying a little too far.
You know why I had her on, man? One of our listeners.
It's good information.
One of our listeners requested that we
requested RSI. Yeah, I remember that.
So we're talking about it.
I remember that.
I do remember that, but
that would be why the spray is in here.
Yeah,
but no, stuff like that, and like, and here's the worst thing, right? The worst part of this technical issue thing is occasionally we have it's a necessity for, you know, me in particular to do the show from home, right? When I'm doing it from home, and I'm that's right. And when I'm doing it from home, if I'm coming in through Skype or I'm coming in through Asterisk or something like that, the lag sometimes is
it's really bad.
Incredible.
Seconds, yeah.
But it's not bad if it's just us talking, right? But if we're interviewing a guest, what happens is there's a 4-second lag on their side and there's a 4-second lag on my side. It's 8 seconds. Now, that's huge. Right, so I say something, and by the time they actually hear it, they're
talking
already
over them.
Well into the next sentence, and I'm talking over them, and I feel that that's not polite, right? So I just normally I'll just shut the hell up unless it's something so flagrant that I have to make mention, and I don't care if I'm riding over top of somebody.
Well, the problem doesn't occur as much with the Asterisk now, does it? With the new Astro, with the Trix box.
No, and it doesn't occur as much with the new Skype stuff either. Let me ask you.
What was it?
Skype sounds better.
What?
It does sound better.
What was it that really happened last week? I know you were saying that Asterisk was eating all the bandwidth. What exactly happened? Did you ever figure it out?
What was going on was somebody was hitting the Asterisk box.
Dame was Alan? Licking the power
no,
cords.
No, it was not
like
me.
I don't know what was going on, but I could see it, and it was coming from RCN. And did you try connecting to the Asterisk box last week?
Yeah, an hour before the show, but you couldn't get connected.
Right?
I couldn't connect, so I just shut off that machine.
What did you? Oh, you shut it off.
Yeah,
something
so
was hitting the Asterisk box, and the Asterisk box was just going
eating everything
ballistic.
Because I couldn't get in through the Linux side, so I went in through the Mac, and it connected, but it wouldn't do anything. So I just said hell with it, and I shut off the Mac, and that was it.
It wasn't me. We can throttle the
Asterisk
to only use up so much bandwidth.
And it couldn't have been me because I couldn't maintain a connection through the Asterisk box and through Skype.
But something was just like,
my
was
sound
like
card, so.
right up the chimney with the Asterisk. Once we shut the Asterisk off, it was fine. And I had seen similar behavior before from like Icecast would do sometimes go wonky.
Yeah.
And that's why initially I thought it was with the Icecast server. And it was one of our mirrors, I thought. Because I kept, you know, playing around and shooting it off.
Ghosts.
And when I did the TCP dump,
trolls.
And I actually watched the traffic, it was
not
just
you trolls. You know.
Somebody, you know, something coming into the Asterisk. It was from an RCN thing I kept seeing repeatedly. And when I killed the Asterisk, that solved the problem.
Hmm.
But it was one of those things where, you know, I thought it was
it solved the problem, but did he pull us on the fucking show after that?
No.
I reminded him.
No.
Brought it up. Get these guys on. At least, you know.
You were in the conference.
No more smooching for you, Dan.
You were in the conference.
That's it.
I conferenced you in.
Don't give me freaking excuses now. I'm sorry. I love you. No. Uh-uh. Nope, cutting you off. That's it.
But you know that's another that brings up another problem. When we have multiple guests in remotely, the quality of the show degrades to the lowest value of the guest that has the worst audio. Like you could be fine, and again with last week there was you know the one guy was fine, the other guy's audio was so low
in the beginning, yeah.
And then you start as you use Skype. The longer you use Skype, the more of a lag that builds up.
Sure.
So after about 45 minutes, you have a significant lag, and you have somebody you have a significant lag on top of somebody who's really low. So when that person is really low, you really can't fix the audio in post production. I mean, you can bring everybody.
That's
out
why we
down.
Need to break out the VoIP to a separate channel.
Well,
that
even if
do
you break out the
yes,
VoIP,
it would. Yes, it would.
You have everybody in one conference room.
So that's
only
one channel.
But it would
you
be at least,
break
but at least
each
you would,
person.
You would be, at
you,
least
you,
be able to
need,
play with it.
Yeah, but because everybody would be going into one channel.
It would help to a certain degree.
On it, because everybody's in one conference room. On it, so there's only one output coming from the conference
it
room.
It helps. The only thing it helps is everybody that's not on
in the conference
VoIP,
room.
Yep.
That's not on the remote. That's not remote. Everybody that's remote is going to, you can't really fix that at that point. If you have more than one person remote, and the audio between the two different people that are remote
it's
are so
fucked,
varied,
basically.
You can't fix that. There's
no
way to
there's
really
no way to
fix
it.
That.
You really can't address it.
But you know what? We're not doing... This is not a professional show, right? We're doing the best we can with the equipment that we have.
On a non-existent budget.
Thank God for Alan and bringing his equipment that he's got going on over here, too, because, where would we be... Well, we'd still be doing it. It'd just get a little bit cheesier sounding. Right on the old audio.
It was the two microphones
like
and the splitter plugged into the back of the car.
Yeah. No, that worked.
I mean,
that
but,
worked
you know, last
we
week's
for.
Show, yeah, it was really crappy. And, you know, this week it's like completely different.
Overall, we're not that. I was listening before on the headphones to the stream, and I thought the stream sounded pretty
stream
good.
The stream sounds great, usually.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but the problem doesn't really come in with the stream. It's when we get down to the point
when
where
Dan starts touching the buttons. That's what happens.
Yeah, when we're with the recording, again, it's a little more sensitive because it's not as forgiving.
Right.
You know, you get that person. If somebody's 10 decibels lower than everybody else, it's really hard to fix that.
Oh, yeah. And there's nothing you can do about it at that point. We have to fix it when we're live. right.
on it. And if the, you know, but it comes back to if you bring two people into the conference room,
that's it,
and one is lower than the other, there's nothing you can do.
Nothing
about
you
it.
Do about
right.
it.
Nothing at all.
I think what we suggested, we talked about what we're going to do is no more than two people in the VoIP at all, and we do the guests at the very beginning of the show. Change the format so that we talk to the guests at the very beginning of the show. We have a few minutes before the show starts to at least get them on and fiddle with them. Instead of having the guests come on at 9 o'clock where it's like, crapshoot. Okay, but right. how do they sound?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I don't think it's going to make any difference at all how many people we have
looking at over there?
In the conference room, just as long as we have the bandwidth to compensate for.
Is that who we spoke to?
It's still, yeah, this is the chick we spoke to right here, Deborah Quilter. I think it's her, right? Yeah. Okay.
She's a very nice lady.
Deborah Quilter. Mm.
Okay.
I have her website. I'm working on it.
All right. So enough of apologies and backpedaling and what we're going to do.
I'm not. No, you're the one that got apologized, man. I wasn't apologizing.
Speaking of apologists, man, you damn Apple apologists.
You know what? The thing is, for the longest time with regards to Apple, I look at their products that they release, and I say, as a piece of hardware, it's a nice piece of equipment. I like OS 10.
Agreed.
I like OS 10 is all right, and I think they have some nice.
Mark Stanley mentioned last night, our buddy Mark, says he doesn't hate the Macintosh at all. He
just hates the company.
He hates Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Some of their hardware is really nice. But as time progresses and I listen to more people and I see what's going on, I was really, really going to buy. If I could buy a MacBook, but now I don't think I'm going to buy a MacBook.
Dude, StinkPad, man.
I want to get one of those
preloaded with SLED.
Yeah, get the new T60 or whatever it is.
What kind of like cinched it for me was if you watch the keynote speech, Jobs' keynote speech.
I haven't watched it. I will watch it though.
What was interesting is they brought this German guy out who had made a big hoo-ha about last year. At the WWDC, Worldwide Developers Conference.
Yeah, they copied it.
Yeah, they were making a big statement about, oh, hey, Redmond, get your photocopier out, right? And what is the number two thing that they introduced in Leopard?
Virtual desktop.
Virtual desktop.
Thank you, Apple. You invented
it. It's like, wow. And I'm like thinking to myself, you know, finally.
Thank you, Steve Jobs. We
what
love
I've
you.
Been doing for, you know, 10 years now is finally legitimate because it's Apple.
What a bunch of tossers,
man. And it kind of makes you go back to the whole thing where you're thinking about, well, you know, all these years people have been like, well, there's no way anybody's ever going to dual boot Windows and Linux and do it seriously. There's no way anybody's going to want to run
now the
a
Apple
VMware
people are doing the same crap.
Yeah, VMware session. And
they're
now,
guilty
all of
what
sudden,
they were going against.
All of a sudden, Apple comes out with Mac with Boot Camp, and it's like,
you can do a boot,
and everybody should be dual booting. And yeah. then Parallels comes out, and like everybody should be running virtual machines. It's like. You know, it's like, come on.
Bunch of hypocrite bastards, man.
Like, what the all the pundits
so full
all
of shit.
Suddenly do a 360.
I still want a MacBook.
180.
Fuck you.
I still want a MacBook. I don't give a shit what anybody says.
You can have it.
I still want one,
what
too.
What I saw nice, the third nice thing
except
previewed.
For when they catch on fire, you know. That kind of sucks.
The third thing they previewed at the WWDC was a product called Time Machine. And I think this is the product that Brian from Linux Action Joe said is going to destroy his product. And Time Machine looked to me, all right, if you're going to go on the Windows side of thing, it's called Go Back. But they threw a fancy interface on it, which is nice. And I said to myself, wow, it looks like they took Subversion or CVS and threw it
slapped
a
their own
fancy,
front end. Yep.
A fancy GUI
fancy
on
GUI
front of it.
That does it every time you copy
they,
something.
They
what a bunch of cocks.
They kind of set it up for personal use.
But how do you really feel, Pat? That's what I want to know.
You know what? And the difference is, what Apple has done is they essentially thrown a really neat GUI on top of it.
Which is what they do for everything.
This is what they
right.
do, yeah.
That's what
they steal
that's
from open source, right. put their own front end to it, and claim it as their own.
That's
typical.
Apple. That's what
part
they do.
Part of the course for Apple.
And you know what? And after they do it, then Microsoft gets
exactly.
out the photocopier, yep. and they do it too.
Yep,
and that,
exactly.
That's so. How the world
the,
works.
The difference
you know?
Between Apple and Microsoft
the only
is
innovation that we have is open source.
Microsoft mm-hmm. are a bunch of wolves. Apple is a wolves in sheep's clothing. That's the difference. But it was smaller market share.
Did you get raped by an Apple representative or something?
He must be. Early on in his childhood, yes.
You know?
He went to a Mac store and a guy said, guy behind the counter said, come over here, let me show you my iPod.
You know what it is, man?
Here's my iTouch.
SE30. Lately, the Pat got burned by the iTouch.
The Mac fanboys, man, have been bringing it up a notch. And I'm ready to freaking go all out and freaking combat them, man.
But, you know, that's the thing. When he pulled out the virtual desktop and everybody started
clapping like
I
idiots.
Just wanted some guy to stand up and say,
What the
fuck you?
Yep, the reality field was on at that point.
Some guy to stand up and say, hey, look, it's KDE.
I know, right? I can't wait to see KDE format. I think it's going to blow a lot of people away. The latest version of GNOME is awesome, man. I was trying out the Debian testing, man. Smoking fast. GNOME is awesome on it. I was really impressed.
You know what? I was running.
Totally
this
impressed.
This brings us back to the superior Apple products, right? My daughter's birthday is Friday, and she wants a computer. And I found out that, by computer, what she really wants is my iMac. I have an iMac Indigo, right?
Yeah, where do you keep finding these things, man?
I
want one of those.
I got an Apple Pimp, man. I'll hook you. I'll give you his address. It was $100. So what it ended up being is I bought my daughter an iMac Indigo, just like mine. Only hers is a 5. So I got a 500 megahertz Indigo with 300 and something megs of RAM, 20 gig hard drive, and CD-ROM and the whole, you know what I mean? For just over $100, that's shipping included and everything right to my door. Okay, and I put OS 10 on it, and I'm playing. You know, it works all right. And the reason I put OS 10 on it is because my daughter likes OS 10, and she uses Macs in school and stuff like that. And I figured that'd be a nice thing for her. But I also wanted to try just for shits and giggles, try playing with it on my iMac at home, which is a 400 megahertz and 512 megs of RAM. And it has a 6 gig hard drive. So I put OS 10 on there, but the kicker is with a 6 gig hard drive, there's not enough space to do the updates, right?
Yeah.
So you can run it fine, but you can't update any of the software. Or maybe you can.
Don't you
just have to update
a
piece at a time.
To
I think so. I probably could have done updates if I just did one piece of software at a time and then went and did another one and another one. But I said, yeah, do everything. So what happens is it did it, and then all of a sudden X died, and, it just was bad. So to make a long story short, I installed Debian on it because I just happened to have a Debian PPC CD. I figured, why not, right? I put that on there, did the workstation install for Debian. It's got GNOME on it. Now, the last time I did the workstation install on an x86 box, it had KDE. I don't know what the hell I did different. Maybe it was a different CD or something. I don't know.
By default, GNOME is the desktop on Debian.
But when I did the x86 install under VMware, it was KDE.
It went to KDE, and you didn't touch any of that.
I don't recall. I must have done something different, though. But anyway, I started using GNOME on there, and, it runs beautiful. It's a beautiful little machine running Linux on there. Everything works. The sound comes up, and the screen looks nice, and the whole... and then, of course, under Linux, I have access to things like OGG files and all this
other
stuff.
What are OGG files?
Which is one of the major problems.
For audio that nobody uses.
Which is much of one of the major problems that I have with OS X, because I have OS X on this
product
on my kid's computer, and she wants to listen to my music library. My music library also not only does it have MP3, it has OGG files. iTunes doesn't like OGG files.
Oh, of course not.
So I'm thinking, hey, maybe I ought to just stick Debian on there and everybody be happy. But I think I'm going to have her make that decision. Even though Linux is truly, truly faster on the same equipment, by far.
It is,
and I believe they should have worked with. But there's just a few things that are missing. There's
Flash.
The brightness and contrast support stuff.
Flash
on the
video
multimedia
support.
Stuff.
PPC Linux really ass sucks. Can I ask you a question? What is the correlation between shits and giggles?
I don't know. Why?
Because you said shits and giggles. I just was wondering. I always wonder, what is the correlation between shits and giggles?
Haven't you ever done that?
them 240s are starting to take effect, Dan, huh?
Huh?
Them 240s are starting to take effect.
Kick it in.
Dan's flagged. That's it.
I don't wanna. But you know, let's get back to Arch.
He's not
here,
slurring yet.
Yeah, let's
but
hear about Arch.
Deep thinking.
Yeah, let's hear your.
I like to hear what Link has to say about Arch. Besides, he thinks that the installer sucks.
All right,
I think that's the most important thing right there is the installer. For
the
Arch.
Installer for Arch is absolutely horrible. If you go on their site, all right,
they tell you don't install.
The Arch fanboys on their site for some reason. Like, I get the impression, reading through their documentation, that they think it's all right, okay, or wonderful. It is none of those. It's absolutely the most horrific. It's worse than the Debian installer used to
be. The new Debian installer is smoking.
The used to be.
Yeah.
Their old Debian
the old
installer
one.
That really,
the
really
one that
stunk.
People, everybody complained about.
Yes. It's worse, or as bad or worse than that. I don't give a shit what they say. They're out of their fucking minds. Nobody is going to want to come and dick around with that, you know, unless they're on a mission to hurt themselves. You know what I mean? But, you know, that being my mission, since you guys were telling me how freaking wonderful Arch
was. Once you got it on there, it's sweet.
Well, that's the thing, you know.
It's really nice.
That almost makes up for it. Like, after you dick around with this horrible-ass installer and get things working... When it's going, it runs really great.
What killed you about the installer?
What killed me about the installer?
What didn't kill you about the installer?
Configuring grub by hand.
None of that is even bad. It's just the initial package install, okay? Which is not hard once you figure out that everybody on the website, see, they have all these options, right? Install the basic packages, the network packages, the blah, 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 blah. If you select to install everything, the first thing you get is an error saying that you have a conflicting package. You know, you can't have this package and that package. You got to go fix them. And then just like dumps you back to the installer. Like it doesn't fix the shit for you, give you an option to fix it right then. No.
Wait. What CD did you download?
I downloaded the Arch install CD, man.
Because I just did the base install.
That's what you're supposed to do, the base install.
But I picked everything, right? It was there. I went, like, when I install Slackware.
Full install.
Yeah. When I install Slackware, I pick, you know, install everything and installs all the packages.
I only have one
you're supposed
choice,
to do the bare bones minimum network.
Yeah. There you go. That's what everybody says. Oh, no, don't do the full install. Do the bare bones minimum.
Then they should
eliminate
it.
Why the fuck can you do it on the CD then? Why can you pick all the full
fucking
install?
They should eliminate it and I should have a bare bone net install.
Yes. Exactly.
You got a valid
point.
That
should be it.
Valid
it should
point.
Be one choice, you know, bare bones minimum
yep.
shit.
Everything over the network.
And then that would have eliminated a lot of my problems.
How about that partitioner, though?
No, that wasn't. That's not bad.
I had problems with that. Partitioning wasn't that bad, but yeah. the actual where you come to the point of selecting where you want your mount points is a little at first confusing.
I think that could be for some newer Linux people. I really didn't. It didn't affect me.
It affected me a little bit because I'm sitting there trying to. It's a little different than Slack where you do it all at one shot, I think. And I was sitting there like, well, wait a minute. Why is it not letting me
get. You know why? You know why it probably didn't bother me? Because it was kind of reminiscent of a BSD partitioner. So I really didn't have a problem with that. And I had already, written down what partition it was I wanted to keep and stuff. My big hang up was, you know, the package selection I thought really sucked. I think they would be much, much better. It would behoove themselves to take, and I even wrote this little stupid script, right? Easy Arch. And all it does is it runs Pac-Man and puts the files on there that you need to get, like, get X running and, you know, stupid shit like that. Because while Pac-Man, I think, is a wonderful package manager and it does its job banging on, right? It's got it going on. When you finally get Arch installed on the basic thing and you want to get X running, right?
Yeah.
You do, like, I installed, you know, Pac-Man to do the install for X.org. Well, it has this list of dependent packages and it downloaded all the dependent packages and, you know, there it was and it was ready to go. Well, the problem is that, like, X is not dependent on font libraries, you know? Doesn't give a shit. It's your window manager and your programs that are dependent on the font libraries, not X. So when you download,
but you need those fonts to have a usable system.
Yeah, but exactly. And I'm thinking, I downloaded X and I started and I downloaded X. Oh, well, I need a window manager and I downloaded XFCE which apparently also doesn't have a font library dependency. And I started it up, and I'm getting all these fucking errors, you know, external errors, can't find this color thing, and you know, this font crap. And I'm on the phone with Dan, like, hassling him, right? All right, motherfucker, you told me it was going to work, I'm getting all these freaking...
Did you try to get a hold of Judd Vinay and bust his chops?
No. I busted Dan's chops because you guys were telling me that it was the most wonderful thing since sliced bread.
So. It's nice once you get it running.
So I was crawling up Dan's asshole about this, and we finally got it running, and I figured out what packages we needed. So that's why I wrote the little easy art script so it just does it. And the same thing goes with the video codecs and the DVD playing. And
so all manual setups, reminds me of Slackware in a lot of ways.
Once you get your head wrapped around that you need to do that kind of stuff and there needs to be a little easier utility to help out, it's not bad at all.
Right.
But it's that the initial thing where I was really confused about the pack. Like, I was really out of my mind when I went in there and picked every package, and the first thing it did was tell me that there was a dependency error and backed back out to the installer. I was, you know, incensed about this thing. Here I am, right? I'm putting this on my main workstation at home. You know, this is not some test box piece of shit. This is my main workstation that I do everything on after I go home at night, and I wanted it working right frickin' then. You know what I mean?
So my question is it still there?
Yes, it is.
And have you been happy with it?
I have been happy with it up until last night.
What happened last night?
Oh, here we go.
Last night at
the... updated the curdle?
Yeah. No, last night at the LUG meeting, we were talking with some people about VMware server and stuff. And I wanted to try...
here we go.
I wanted to try VMware out on Arch. Well, you can't get VMware to install on Arch.
We've been down this road before, yeah, Dan.
Because
right?
Arch has... well, for the first problem I encountered is that Arch has it doesn't have the sysv directory init scripts. It's got BSD, and I actually prefer BSD init scripts.
Right. There's a how-to on the wiki where you can follow how to install it.
Here or there. I found a way around that, around the init script issue, but the next issue that came up was the kernel. And I have the kernel that they gave me, updated kernel. I have the frickin' headers for the damn kernel. They were in there, too. But every time I tried to install VMware, it's telling me that the headers didn't match the kernel. It's the same shit, and you can't get in.
There is a custom build in the Arch user repositories, AUR.
For VMware.
I looked.
Did you look on the wiki, and that you pulled it off there?
You have to add a different repository or something. You must.
You got to use the AUR, and then there's a how-to on how to set it up.
See, that's what it is. You got to add another freaking repository.
The AUR.
Why don't you put the freaking thing in the damn repositories that are already included in Arch?
Because it's AUR, so you can not do Arch. It.
Right.
What the?
AUR, Arch user repository. It's a lot of, like, secondary applications.
Yeah, with the program.
That are out there. And the packages aren't there exactly. What's there are the builds. Now, if you listen to Dan's episode of TWAT, you would have heard how to build the packages for Arch, where he talks about the AUR and all the other dependencies.
Word.
Package build and what you got to do.
Do you know what? I don't want to do all that bullshit.
Then you run know? Your because run Ubuntu.
Ubuntu.
It's yeah. I'm damn close to doing that just so I can try out this VMware stuff. But probably what I will do is I will take this badass server that I have at work that I'm not using. It's a 3 gigahertz box, and I'm going to install Debian on it.
Debian's nice.
And that with the sysv init. Huh? A basic, because I want to try the server thing, which doesn't have to have graphics or anything, right? Yeah. I just want a fat, you know,
I have VMware.
Probably will do that
server because they released VMware server for free now.
Uh-huh.
So you're free to download it. Free as money.
Yeah, but I'm still going to want to use the client portion of the VMware.
Where you can, if you use
the server client.
Yeah, the server client.
But is that going to? Am I going to run into the same issue getting the server client running on Arch?
Probably.
Where I have to, you know, get this freaking AUR repository crap going on and all this other.
The thing that's in the ARU, though, is just VMware workstation.
Crap is that, man?
It's not the VMware server.
Well, what the hell is that going to help me with then, you know?
It's not. Compile it yourself. Learn how to use it, do it, and quit bitching.
You can't compile it yourself.
I bet you I can compile it when I'm done here. When you, I just had 240s.
The VMware.
I did the day after you did an Arch install, I did an Arch install too because my backup system died.
Right.
The hard drive died. So I did an Arch install and. What really annoyed me about the Arch install, which is the same thing that I had initially with the Arch install, is invariably, if you go in there and you choose Grub or Lilo, whatever one you choose, it's not set up properly to get from the get-go.
No.
You have to go in and fix it.
Really? And I didn't change a damn thing.
Because I had to, because I went there and I looked at my Grub and I'm like, well, wait a minute, that's not where the kernel is. And I had to change it to fix it where the kernel is.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, how could they screw that configuration file up? Because the kernel
the system won't boot in
then. One place.
It won't boot up then.
Right, it won't. And when I went through the initial install, I forgot to fix the Grub. So, I thought, oh, yeah, it's okay.
So what you're telling me then is they need to fix the horribly broken piece of shit installer.
It's the installer.
the installer is...
And we're back to where we started.
Arch is a great distro, man. I like what they're doing. Yeah, I like the concept. It needs work with the install. I agree.
Getting Arch is the problem. Using Arch really isn't.
Yeah, once it's running, it's beautiful, and fast. And
slim.
I mean, I'm running KDE on it. It's like,
sweet.
It's bang on.
Fast, man.
It's nice and fast.
Nice 20-second boot ups.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's sweet. Now, you know, I had mentioned that my backup system died, and the first thing I grabbed was a G3, an old G3 that we had laying around. And it was my first Slackintosh install. And wow,
yeah,
that was smooth.
It is.
And
it's
I was really enjoying Slackintosh up until the point where it wouldn't recognize the FireWire interface. So I
because you want to use your iPod.
No, I wanted to use the external FireWire drive.
External drive.
That's what we do.
Wasn't
the
a module for it or something.
It just would not recognize anything I plugged into the FireWire, no matter what I tried.
Bummer, man.
So I was like, I don't have time to mess around with this. I found a hard drive. I slapped Arch on it, and it's been running our backup system ever since.
Alan's got a nice new toy here I was playing with. I was on the IRC with it. He's got a Nokia 770, man.
Yes.
That is a sweet toy, man. I want one.
Yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with it.
I'm going to have to hit you.
You're going to have to sell some more stuff.
Yeah, way more stuff. Well, I was selling stuff because I got a bare bones box, AMD 64 box from Tiger Directman for $318. $218 after rebates. I just got it today, and I can't wait to put it together.
What happened to your laptop?
The laptop, the DVD CDR drive died, and the wireless card died. It's still in a warranty, so I shipped it back to them in California. It's being serviced.
They're going to send it back to all the poor little Taiwanese kids and make them fix it.
Like, same piece of shit factory as the crapples are made in.
Some Martha Stewart clothing line right next to Pat's laptop.
Nice.
Hey, you had mentioned demo recorder, and
yes.
I've been playing around with Screencast. Screencast is really nice.
Does it do audio?
But I have not found a way for it to do audio, which is the only thing. Now, demo recorder, they dropped the price.
I saw that, yeah.
On the one that will export to MPEG and AVI. But still, you know.
Well, we're going to have him on. I think his name is it Christian Lernhardt, I think his name is, Austrian guy. We're going to have him on in a few weeks to talk about it. Have you guys tried demo recorder, Link, Alan?
No.
Just check it out, man. It's pretty nice.
It's probably something that I would have to compile on Arch to get going.
No, He's got a universal installer that he has.
No. I had to compile Screencast on Arch, and then I had a problem with the VNC server. So I had to remove VNC, real VNC server, and install the tight VNC for it to actually work for me.
Oh, man.
Tight VNC.
It's tight, man.
Arrgh. Oh, man.
Ouch. Like some of those things you brought up on Alan's Nokia.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go and go through it and clean out the cache now.
Yeah, your wife's gonna be on there like, oh,
give it to Danny. Pulls up Goatsy, Tub Girl rather.
Yeah, well, what were you pouring up?
Pornarchive.com.
You guys are something else, man.
What else? Linspire released their final version. I was very disappointed. They pretty much took the beta version and made it a final version.
Whoa. Isn't that what most people do?
Yeah, but for a beta version, when I looked at it, it was pretty nice. But for as a final release, it left something to be desired with, I thought.
I've heard a lot of bitching about Firefox.
Well, if it was better than
days.
Linspire, they would just call it Slackware.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of bitching about Firefox these days.
There was a post on Dig about Firefox and Linux saying that it was crashing a lot. And supposedly the post was complete bullshit. It was a made-up post. Supposedly it was just a guy ragging.
Well, I mean, I haven't had any problems. Me,
the new version, I got the patch version right away. What is it, 1.506, I think it's up to now? That works pretty well.
I've had Firefox crash on me. You can't ever go to the same site. It just like randomly just pops up and
really?
Crashes.
The last version I've been pretty good with.
I haven't had a problem since 1.something.
Yeah, 106, 1.506 has been pretty good.
Before the last version before it hit 1.0, I think if you listen to the tech show then, I was bitching about it because it was crashing all the time, and I had actually switched over almost entirely to Opera.
Opera's nice.
I like Opera.
I like Opera too.
Did you get M-Player working?
You know, I've been so busy with some other things, I haven't got a chance to.
But ever since they came out with 1.0 or better, I've been using Firefox. I don't have any problems
at all.
And I do web development, so you figure it would crash with me doing stupid shit like writing infinite loops out to the web page and stuff like that. If it was going to crash, it would crash doing that.
The Nokia runs a version of Embedded Opera. It's pretty nice, man.
It's Opera 8.
That's nice.
Nokia Mia Stiffy. we upgraded to NetWare 6.5 Service Pack 5, and it has Bash in it now. And I can.
And you're happy?
Oh, I can do VI, less, SSH. SCP.
Life is
everything.
Good.
And it's making me happy.
Happy. Happy.
Happy, happy. Joy, joy.
That's it.
I'm running all my servers on Linux, which makes me happier.
Uh-huh.
I started playing with our door.
What is it, squeaking?
Your door.
Our door.
Is it squeaking?
What's wrong with your door?
Our door is a multi-tracking recording application, similar in function to Cubase. On Mac and Windows. It's a pretty hefty program. It's really complex. It's very powerful, and there's a bit of a learning curve involved. My old workstation, my old Intel Celeron 2.4, now that I have an AMD 64, I think if I can get our door working on it correctly, I'm probably going to see if we can use it for recording. It's just a show. Let's see how it sounds.
We install Debian on it, and then you just do apt-get
actually
install our door, and then
actually
you
there's
it right up,
the whole thing with recording, real hardcore recording, is you need a low latency kernel. Now, low latency means that it's a very fast kernel that can handle audio recording on the fly. It's pretty much like a real time kernel. So there's a bunch of patches out there by the guy from Red Hat. I forget his name, Miklo Molnar, I think his name is. Anyway, there's certain distributions that are audio specific. I found one called Demudi, which was supported by the Angula project, which is audio applications and for a specific Linux distribution for audio applications. They had their own distro called Demudi, and it hasn't been touched in about a year. Apparently, it was being funded by the Italian government, and they cut the money off back in December, so that project is pretty much dead. Gorkon sent me an email today. He told me about Studio 64. This is another project that's similar to Demudi. Their primarily focus is 64-bit, but they also have old x86
and a lot of Coke.
Version out there. So I downloaded that. I'm going to try that. I tried our door. I got it basically running.
Aw, freak out.
It runs with the Jack server. Are you guys familiar with the Jack server?
Yeah.
It's pretty heavy duty what Jack can do. It lets you route different audio traffic to different devices and applications. It's pretty heavy duty. So this thing relies heavily on Jack for all the interfacing to the hardware.
Here's a question for you. What the hell is the name of the distribution that we use to stream the stuff on?
Dynabolic.
Doesn't Dynabolic have Ardour on it?
I don't know.
I thought
Does
it did.
Dan?
He's over there with his KVM, man.
So Studio 64 is the distro to try.
I never connected to BinRev this week.
Oh, man. That's why everybody in the stream is going, what the hell is going on? Aren't they having a show or what?
I listen to old episodes.
A little late now, Dan.
Yeah, seriously. It's like quarter after 10.
And what,
So basically,
everybody's on the IRC going,
Basically, I've been playing with. I have an M audio card that does four channels simultaneous. I've been playing with that, and I'm going to be working with it and trying to learn the program and get it going. Hopefully, it's something we could use.
Awesome.
Holy shit. You know what I forgot to talk about?
What'd you forget?
Trixbox.
Trixbox.
Holy crap.
AKA Asterisk at Home.
Worst install. No, actually, it was an easy install.
The tricks are for kids.
Do you know what the problem? Trixbox, easy install. Documentation
sucks. Still,
I mean, you know how you had with the Asterisk at Home, the easy.
Yeah, there's a wiki page right now.
It's gone.
It's gone. It's completely gone.
They replaced it with something else. The documentation freaking sucks for this. Like,
what is it that you had to do though? Like, I mean,
configuration files.
Because I remember installing Asterisk at Home. You put the freaking CD in, and you left. And he came back a half hour later, and Asterisk was running.
Right,
and
you just had to change the configuration file to point to whatever
you had
right.
to
provider
change
you're using.
Your configuration file and your IP address.
And you set up your extensions.
Yeah.
To get the conference running properly and a few other things, you had to consult some of the documentation.
Was it different than Asterisk at Home?
It wasn't a lot different, but when I sat there and was trying to find the documentation for what I had done before, even mm-hmm. though I had a lot of the configuration left over. It was awful to find this stuff.
Got to go digging.
Yeah, and to get the full picture, you have to go to like three or four different sites.
Yeah, bulletin
and
boards.
There are like three or four different wikis that you have to go to.
Wikis, the most wonderful thing to go to.
And we know how much we love those.
And you know,
which is exactly why I don't go peeling through the Arch documentation that looks like shit, because it's all freaking wikis.
And that's the thing. I mean, it works fantastic. But the documentation is just awful.
So it's a bear to set up still?
What?
It's a bear to set up?
No, it's just set up. It's pretty much back to where it was before.
But it was a pain to try to figure everything out.
If it hadn't have been, you know, this time it took me about an hour. But, you know, like last time it took a couple of days to get it to where we wanted to get it. Actually, a week or so. if you take everything, this time it took a lot less time because I had a lot of configuration. I knew exactly what I was doing. But if I was a new person coming to this and I wanted to go through the documentation and I wanted to do something a little different, it was like, oh my god! And just to find out the proper syntax for the broad voice connectivity, like it's really wacky.
Yeah,
it is.
It's not completely logical,
right? And in the documentation. You have to go to a couple different sites. I mean, that Asterisk's Trixbox, they work phenomenally well. It's just the documentation is the killer, is the key right there, and that's what's missing. But, you know, if you've done an Asterisk at Home install or messed around with Asterisk, Trixbox is going to be a no-brainer.
Now, is that officially Asterisk at Home? It's just renamed? Or
yes.
Rhea.
Yes, so it's the same project, basically.
It's the newest version. What I don't like about it, I guess, with the whole Asterisk at Home, and I'm not sure if it's the same with Asterisk, and I think it all has to do with the AMP portal setup and everything, is it's so dependent upon a MySQL server that you take the configuration files, and those configuration files you see in your Etsy directory are kind of like just, you know, what the configuration is. If you edit those by hand, it doesn't retain that configuration. It'll overwrite.
So what'd you do? You reset it. You reset it from scratch. You redid it.
I had to pretty much redo it from scratch because what's important is that you take the MySQL database files over. Not because it saves the configuration and everything. The AMP portal saves it all into the MySQL database. So if you put something in, if you hand edit the Asterisk files in the Etsy directory. It will overwrite those files with what's in the MySQL database if you're not careful.
Cool. So you got it working, man.
No, it works. Yeah.
Sound quality better than the old Asterisk at Home?
Oh,
I think
yeah,
it is.
You tell me.
I think it is. Yeah.
But you know, it's they do a the job they're doing is phenomenal. I like the new interface, the admin interface.
I haven't seen it because I haven't installed it.
It's pretty cool.
So, like, man, what's going on with the lug, man? You guys went last night, right?
Yeah.
Everybody was there but you,
Everybody
Pat.
Was there but you.
Tuesdays are really bad for me, man.
Well, if you could have made it just this one time, then you could have been there to cast your vote on a new meeting day.
So when is it going to be, Saturdays?
Do you want it to be on Saturday? Because if you want it to be on Saturday, I'm going to pick Tuesday again. Bastard.
Pick Tuesday.
Yes, Saturday. Definitely Saturday.
That, that seems
Saturday
to be
afternoon.
The predominant
good.
Thing.
It
on
was
front.
The people that showed up. Most people said, you know, Saturday afternoon would be a yeah. cool time to try.
It's good so. Because we can do a little longer than, you know, an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah, if you wanted to, we're, you know, we're not as limited by time and most people's work schedules and things like yeah. that. So I think that'd be a good
Tuesdays
idea.
Tuesdays is just really bad for me, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, me too. You know, I haven't made a I was co-founder. I haven't made a meeting in like 4 or 5 months, right? Because Tuesday is just a sucky
yeah,
night.
It's a bad day.
And like, you know, there's certain things I need to get done during the week and night. And taking out Tuesday and Wednesday night is like a major
yep.
chunk of my time. You know what I mean?
Didn't we choose Tuesday to work around the LVCG and SIG schedule?
Yes, we did.
And now
the hell with them.
Yeah. Them. They don't come
Saturdays
anywhere.
Are good because now we'll be able to do maybe an install fest every once in a while.
Yes, but
yeah,
we haven't had
that.
The greatest luck with those.
It's been
either.
2 years, man.
Yeah,
last install fest was at my house like 3 years ago. Shit.
Yeah, and the one before that, like we had two people there, Dan and I. So,
because the other two people bailed out.
Yeah.
There was a flood somewhere, wasn't there?
I think there was. Yeah,
an emergency meeting.
Emergency meeting. They were
oh,
gone.
Man. Well, what do you guys think about maybe doing like occasionally going to like an internet cafe or something?
I think that'd be great. One of the things that I mentioned is that I really like doing the informal meetings a lot better, where you know we can all just hang out and chit chat, and you know you hear everybody's problems and what they're working on and things like. I really enjoy that. You know, sit down with some food. So an internet cafe would be fantastic. I think we ought to hijack Panera.
Panera's good. There's also that place.
You know what I mean?
Over
like
by,
they're gonna turn us away, right? And 20 people Porter's show up
pub,
with their laptops. Yeah. They're gonna be like, "Oh yeah."
Over
sure.
over in Tatami.
You want to buy my $5 cup of coffee? Come on in.
There's an internet cafe.
I say, they're not gonna care.
Right?
Where?
In Tatami.
Where's that?
Near the cigar shop where Alan goes.
Oh, is it
over
one
by me?
One? Yeah, where the hell is that?
Next to the massage.
Over where the, you know where the airfield is?
Yeah.
Where the bank is on that corner. You go make the turn there. And you keep going towards Tatami, and it's an internet cafe.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to go there, man.
I'm going
to
go and check it out, because I'll talk to the guys.
Road trip.
Yeah, road trip, definitely.
See if they'll have us in there.
And that's where the cigar store is, too, right?
Yeah, it's right
there. I couldn't find one down there and
right
looking
there.
For it. I couldn't
yep,
find it.
Forks
so Township. Apparently, I didn't look hard enough.
Well, when you make the turn there.
I never turned. That was a problem.
That was a problem, man.
I'm just driving past the airstrip light. Going, when these new freaking cigar store, you hear me?
At the light, make a right. And then make the very first left. And it's down in the it's like a little industrial area.
Okay.
It's right down in
so
there.
So now instead of making
side.
A right to go to the cigar shop, you're going to make a left and go the other way.
No, we want to go to the cigar
no,
shop.
No, I'm just going to wait for one of you guys, and I'm going to follow you around so that I can figure out where the hell it is.
We just want to go to the cigar
but
shop.
I think we definitely should make a road trip out of it and hit the cigar shop and the internet cafe.
Okay.
And
snap.
Make some plans with
we're doing Tiki Bar next week, aren't we?
Yes.
I got to call them and make reservations.
Now, what time are we going to go to that?
I don't know. I got to call and make
are
reservations.
Are we going to go earlier in the day? Or
well, I don't think it opens till like 4 in the afternoon
I'll have
anyways.
To call
let's
make
go early, man. Enjoy the evening.
All right. I'll have to call and make reservations.
Request a table down by the river again.
That was kind of cool. Yeah.
Are you going to wear Hawaiian shirts?
We don't bother as many
when
people.
We
did
ducks
cigars.
Down there, yeah. We had our cigars. Everybody's happy. Stogies.
Dan is being disturbing once again.
Yeah, all right.
Dan, I'm going to miss you, man, when you're gone, but I'm not going to miss your creepy videos when I walk in the door.
Yeah, you will.
He'll have them sitting in your email box, in your inbox, waiting for you, man, when you get to work.
Yeah.
That'll get filtered out.
Depends if it's just a link, you know.
Tiny URL.
Important text show news for you,
tiny,
Pat.
Tiny URL.
If we can keep them under 3 megs.
Yeah, tiny URL, right? Oh,
keep them under 3 megs. Most email systems will let it go through.
Okay. Is that from the air conditioner?
The air conditioner's kicking on and off.
Although I think it's pretty much like
almost frozen over here.
Oh, speaking of power dips, I finally got a UPS for the server. Oh,
awesome.
The other day I was putting in, I was replacing the dimmer switch on here, and I had the UPS was going like, was bitching because the power was cut off, and I had just about had the last screw in, and it was ready to shut off the turn on the power, and the UPS died.
Didn't you hate that shit?
Oh, come on.
That UPS that I picked up, man, with those power outages, it lasted 3 hours, man, which is pretty exceptional.
How much did you pay for that?
I paid like $120.
Oh, $120, okay.
It's pretty exceptional when they say that the uptime
that's
is like
nice.
An hour. So it lasted three times.
I lost one in all those power things, but It gave up its life valiantly because it saved my TV and stereo equipment.
There you go.
And the TiVo stuff.
That's what they're for, right? Better buy
power came back on.
It did
the same thing as the other one. It was like,
bless you.
Thank you. I got so sick of the being little power dips and the server would go down and then Link would call me up and say, oh. And that was a kicker. Everything was going fine. I take a drive out there to the Wegmans on 33 because I had to meet Caleb there.
Okay.
Give him some stuff. And Link calls me up. I'm halfway there and he's like, your server's down. I'm like, what are you talking about? I just left. Everything was fine. No, your server's down.
Oh. So what, do you ping his server every 2 minutes?
No, I just was trying to get my email, and I tried to send an email, and I sent it, and I got an SMTP error, and I'm like, what the f***ing is going on? So then I tried to hit the web page, and the web page is down. I'm like, all right, now I know something's going on. And I call him up. I'm like, Dan, can you do me a big favor, man? Yeah, what's that? Turn your fucking server on, you know? No, it was just on, man. I was just there. He's like trying to convince me. Dude, I'm sending the mail right now, and it's not going.
Time it
Damn
out.
Damn it. And it's happened so many times over the last, like, few weeks and stuff. I think he's finally starting to get really frustrated.
We have to get a gift for Dan when he leaves.
I got raped on buying the UPS. I know I did, because I was, like, desperate, and the only place I could find was Staples, and I paid 50.
Oh, yeah.
$50 for it. I'm like,
well, that's only like $15 more than it's worth. That's
I'm like, I know I can get a better one online, probably a whole lot, but
oh,
I need
hell
it
yeah.
now. Because storm clouds were coming, and I'm like, I need it now.
Yeah. I switched ISPs.
I did buy one at Staples once, but it was a sales thing. It was like $50 with a $50 rebate, so it was okay.
Nice.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah, there was no rebate in this. I couldn't find the cheapest
one. I found the very last one. Somebody had pushed it into the back, so it was like, save it for later.
Yeah.
So I was like, they hit it behind a couple of cartons of something.
Yeah, it was behind stuff.
I switched to RCN this week, so I'm on the same ISP as Lincoln Allen now. The only thing that had to change is my blog. I had to run it on port 8080, so.
They block port, don't they, pricks? They also block port 25.
They'll unblock it for you if you pay for business account.
There you go.
They unblock.
But you know what? I'm not that. I'm more attached to my money than I am to having a static IP and an unblocked port 80.
So my
I'm fine with 8080.
My blog address changed from pdavilla@homelinux.org to pdavilla.homelinux.org/8080 /blog. So.
/ is a dickhead. No, never mind.
it's 10:30.
Smile, Pat.
Wait, hold on. It's a 10:30 time.
Oh, no. Oh, man.
Yes,
it's
out.
It's not the smell. It's the burning of my eyes and my skin.
I think it's time to go.
You painted this room. Now you're peeling the paint again.
Yeah. I hate painting.
Well, there's a couple bubbly spots. You wanted to make sure you have a chance to redo it or something, right?
This room is the cleanest I've seen since I've known you.
Ever.
Just wait. When we get the rug in here, it's going to be a lot cleaner. The new rug. What's neat is as soon as you walk through the door, you can see the stains on the rug all the way under the right there. With a dog.
It'll definitely help that the dog's not pissing on your cable modem anymore.
That's it.
Yeah. Or your DSL, rather.
All right, so play some music out of here.
Yeah. What do you got?
We have Big Bad World from Jonathan Colton.
Oh, boy.
We'll hear what that sounds like. And then
good night, all.
Thank you for listening. Next week, who's our guest?
I don't know.
Oh, you could have done some Frapper Match shout-outs.
You know, speaking of the Frapper Match shout-outs, man, it's been slowing down. People, if you're new to the show, go to our Frapper Map, check it out. Put yourself on her, man. We'd like to see where you're coming, and we'll do a shout-out to you.
Yeah.
We're stuck.
Shout-outs. Yeah. Wait, have you checked recently?
We've had a few, but it's really slowed down lately.
They're really stragglers now, right? A couple here, a couple there.
At one point, we were getting like 10, 20 a week.
Who's our sponsor? Who's our guest next week?
Take a look. What do we got?
I don't know. And I got to go to the calendar and look.
Go to the calendar, man. That's what it's there for.
Jamie Cameron, developer of Webmin.
Webmin, good stuff.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Good stuff.
Awesome. Where's our Frapper map?
It's on there. Listener map.
Oh, listener map. That's it.
Dan eats up the bandwidth. Going to Frapper.
Cthulhu. Saint has recently joined our Frapper map.
Satan?
Satan.
Cool.
Thanks, Link. I'll see you soon. I don't know what that means.
I'm waiting for you.
Oh.
Keeping it warm for you.
Where is a recent shout-out from Clive Kirkland in Australia? Jim from Hong Kong. Hong Kong.
Hong Kong, all right.
Yeah. Putting HK on the map. Michael Bialio from Montreal, Quebec.
Canada. It's surprising he can read and slur at the same time.
Yes. Brooke Hedrick from West Des Moines, Iowa. I think that's a female. Yes?
Brooke?
I would.
Brooke, maybe.
Maybe. Martin De Panone from Perth, Washington, WA, Australia. I don't know if that's Washington.
Yeah, I think we did those already.
Yeah?
Yeah, we've
only. Oh, wait, this is going back to July.
Yeah, we've only had a couple lately, man. It's really slowed down. People, go on there and put yourself on the Frapper map
Hong
if you
Kong.
Haven't done so already.
All right. Montreal, Hong Kong, Iowa, and Australia.
Nice.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Play us out, Dan.
Play us out.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
This good night, everybody.
Episode 152.
Yep. Thanks for joining us, 152. Join us again next week for 153.
Sweet.
I got to try and turn this audio down.
Where we generally will have four idiots on a microphone talking to somebody.
Let's see what it sounds like.
I can't rhyme that very well.
This is our format, right?
All alone by the table of food in my wrinkled suit.
Yeah, it's all right.
I borrowed time, only thinking of something to say.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Mm, yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.
Yeah, that's a purpose. It's over. That's it. It's over. Have a good one. Thank you. It's over. That's it. Have a good one. Thank you.
It's over.